Judge Huck is from the Southern District of Florida, senior judge. I had the great pleasure of practicing law with Judge Huck many, many years ago. But our court is very grateful to both of them for being here. I don't know if you're aware of it, we have 12 active slots on the court and we've had 4 vacancies for some time. So the court's been hurting, and Judge Hodges and Judge Huck have been very, very generous with their time, and we really appreciate it. I'm sure you all are probably familiar with the lighting system, but just to remind you, the green light is your main time. The amber light indicates you have 2 minutes left. I think it's two. Is it two or three? Two. The red light, we would appreciate it if you drew your remarks to a close. You don't have to stop mid-sentence, but don't give us too many paragraphs after that. First case we have this morning is Global Energies, Wortley versus Crispus Venture Capital. I think we start with Mr. Rogo.
May it please the court, Bruce Rogo and Rob Hauser for Joseph Wortley. The June 17 to June 19 email string was newly discovered evidence. Newly discovered evidence that should have been revealed when the request to produce documents was filed and served. And so that newly discovered evidence would have made a difference in this case, and therefore it meets the requirements of Rule 60B. Newly discovered, could not have been found by due diligence, and could have changed the outcome of the case. The district court, affirming the bankruptcy court's decision not to pursue the hearing based on the newly discovered evidence, the district court's decision was incorrect. There are several mistakes in the district court's decision, mistakes that require reversal of that decision by this court. First, the district court thought that there were other emails that were similar to the June 17 to 19 emails, but none of the other emails were similar to that. The June 17 to June 19 emails made clear there was a strategy, and the strategy was to take Wortley out of the business by using involuntary bankruptcy. So to say that these other emails were similar and therefore Wortley knew that there was collusion is belied by the actual language of those emails. But even more importantly, those emails put the lie to the testimony of Juranich and Tarrant. That testimony, which occurred in October 2010, in that testimony, the deposition testimony, those people testified that there was no collusion, that they didn't collude to use the involuntary bankruptcy. And when they testified, of course, the documents were not available. They could not have been cross-examined on that. So when Wortley filed his motion to dismiss the bankruptcy petition as being in bad faith, he did not have the evidence. What he had was testimony from those two parties and a third party, Roberts, which was perjurious. It was completely false. So when the district court judge said that the material was previously available, she was wrong. When the district court judge said that their testimony was not false, she was incorrect about that. The false testimony, the evidence is there in terms of the June 17 to 19 emails. Juranich denied collusion. Tarrant said he did not believe he had spoken to Juranich. All of it belied by the emails, emails which were not discovered until March 2012. One of the other things that the district court erred in was saying that she thought that the discovery requests in the state case, because there is a state case, that those discovery requests perhaps were different from the discovery requests that were filed and served in the bankruptcy case. And that's simply not so. That surmisal that they were different has no basis in fact. If you look at the discovery requests, basically like any discovery requests, they wanted all of the discussions, all of the evidence, all of the communications between these parties. And the communications that were not given were the key communications of June 17 to 19 emails.
Mr. Rogo, precisely what relief are you seeking, or stated another way, what relief is available in the bankruptcy court, assuming your position is sustained here on appeal?
The relief would be costs, attorney's fees for Mr. Wortley, damages, including punitive damages. 11 U.S. Code Section 303I provides for damages for a bad faith filing, and so those damages would be the damages would be available.
But what are those damages? What would be the measure of those damages?
Well, first of all, the attorney's fees, which are substantial, because had there been a motion to dismiss that was heard, excuse me, based upon knowledge of the actual record, this case would not have proceeded. So you have all those attorney's fees. The damages, a measure of damages would be, this was $1 million that Crispus basically saved and benefited by this fraudulent filing. And so the damages in this situation could be punitive damages, and Crispus, because they conspired to do this bad faith filing, Crispus could then be liable for punitive damages, and the determination of how much of punitive damages would have to be left to the
to the $1 million. Is that the $1 million that Crispus was supposed to put in?
Yes. And so, but in answer to your question, Judge Hodges, costs, attorney's fees, damages, all of them are available for a bad faith filing. So if this case, or when this case, if indeed the court agrees, is remanded, then the instructions should be to determine the remedy, and the remedy, Judge Hodges, would be those kind of things that we're talking about. I think what's important about this case is protecting the integrity of the bankruptcy court. Judge Pasquet's opinion in Re-Alfred Wynn talks at some length about how important it is for a bankruptcy court to look at the filing and make a determination as to whether or not the filing was in good faith. This kind of filing is not in good faith. It's an improper use and improper purpose. If there was a dispute between Wortley and Juranich, and they were both the managers of the company, then you go to state court and you have a dissolution case in state court, maybe a receiver appointed to try to resolve it. You do not use the bankruptcy process in order to achieve a result that could be achieved if there's a need for it in a state court proceeding. It's a complete misuse of the bankruptcy jurisdiction. And that's what Judge Pasquet focused on In re Win, and made it very clear that you have to be very careful, and a judge has an obligation, a bankruptcy judge has an obligation, to determine whether or not there's a good faith filing. Here, that obligation was completely obviated and undermined by the failure to disclose and by the perjurious testimony. So for those reasons, we ask that the decision below be reversed and the court be and the case be remanded to the bankruptcy court and the district court. And it does raise an issue, too, that I have some concern about as to whom this case should go if indeed the case is remanded. Judge Ray was very perfunctory in his view of this. His view was nothing can be done. There's been a sale of the assets and it's all over. And he gave very short shrift to the arguments about bad faith. And I think there's some concern when it goes back as to whether or not this is a case that should go to a different judge to look at this afresh and make a determination based upon the full disclosure of all the facts.
Thank you, sir. You certainly reserved your rebuttal time. Are they on? Green light?
Can I step out just one second? Sign up.
Sure. Okay. Is there some way we can turn up the volume? We're having technical problems, be right with you.
No problem, Your Honor.
And I know nothing about electronics.
Then you're one step ahead of me.
Sure. We're going to reboot the system if you want to sit down and make yourself comfortable.
Yes, sir.
For just a few minutes. Cool. Yeah, that'd be great. As you all know, we do record these and the tapes are available, so we do want to make sure that we have it.
Sure.
Sure.
A photographer being my wife.
Is that Mrs. Huck? Mrs. Huck may come up and take a picture. Court, yeah, sure, you can come right in. The court may be in trouble with three gators on the bench.
That's why we're recording this for historical purposes.
Testing, testing.
We're ready, sir.
Thank you. Go right ahead, counsel.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Chad Pugach on behalf of Crispus Ventures, the appellee. My associate George Zinkler is here in court with me. Your Honors, I want to use my time wisely here to address two sets of issues. One is the substantive issues raised by this appeal under Rule 60B, and the other is to address any concerns the court has, as indicated by the letter that we'd received and otherwise, about exactly what happened here.
Well, Mr. Pugach, let me tell you, we have not conferred. But my problem is, in reading the record, it appears to me that both the bankruptcy court and the district judge just missed Rule 60B. So what I really need your help. What was wrong with the scenario that Mr. Rogo just laid out?
Yes, sir. I'm more than happy and prepared to address that. This case started with a dispute between two people that were not my client. But my client was the party that put $1 million into this. As opposed to what was said, there was no obligation to put the second million in. It was considered, but when my client came back from his vacation in Europe and found that Mr. Jurnich and Mr. Wortley were at war with each other, his $1 million was at risk. And this is all on the record. Global was shut down. The assets had been taken out. The employees were not being paid. The business was dead, and he was out $1 million. So there had to be a determination of what remedies were available. And one of those remedies from the outset was to put Global into a bankruptcy. Now, if my client was in a position where My client was looking to just...
For what purpose? What would have been the purpose to put Global into bankruptcy?
To try to salvage something out of the assets, Judge, and that's the whole point.
To reorganize?
The initial attempt was to reorganize. We filed this as an involuntary Chapter 11 bankruptcy, not Chapter 7. The standards are the same, and the standards are different both under the bankruptcy and under the bad faith standards as to what you have to do. You have to simply prove the requisite number of creditors and that the debtor was...
Okay, I understand that, but,
yeah.
But the goal was to reorganize, at least that was the initial goal?
The initial goal was to reorganize the company.
And where is that discussed in the emails?
There are emails that say that, and it was also in the sworn testimony of the bankruptcy trustee, which was put into evidence, his sworn declarations, which are part of the record on appeal. We filed the 11.
The bankruptcy trustee would not know the goal of those people who controlled the company.
There was also email chains, and these were put into evidence that also discussed the fact that the initial goal was to reorganize. It was the only reason for filing under Chapter 11 as opposed to Chapter 7.
Refuted by the email. That's refuted by the email that Juranich sent to Tarrant.
That's
he lays out the whole plan how to wipe out Wortley.
That's Juranich's email, Judge. There are other emails. And more importantly, this was all addressed up front in the first trial. Judge Ray did not give this short shrift. It was addressed in the first trial.
He didn't have the emails in the first trial.
Judges, he had other emails that said essentially the same thing, and he also
tell
had...
Tell me where there's one email that says what the June 17th, 2010 email says.
It doesn't say exactly the same thing, Judge, but it discusses
even close.
The fact...
Tell me one that says it even close.
It discusses forming another company and having a separate game plan.
And wiping out Wortley.
There were emails from my client to Mr. Wortley where he talked about trying to go forward and reorganize. There's one email.
They had no intention of reorganizing. They wanted to get rid of Wortley's $200,000 note and his stock.
Not correct, Your Honor.
Well, that's what he said in the email.
That's what Juranich said. That's not what my client said. Mr. Juranich is not my client. Mr. Juranich is one of the two parties that was at war with each other, and my client was sitting in the middle and had to choose one way to go or the other, chose the guy with the technology and the goods, so to speak, as opposed to the other guy when they couldn't settle. They made attempts to settle. They couldn't settle. This was discussed up front in the first trial, and I proffered. And remember, judges, this case was not tried based upon evidence being put on through live testimony. By agreement of the parties, depositions were put into evidence, and there was a proffer on each side's part of what was going to happen going forward and what had happened in the past.
So your position is these 2 days of email, these two strings of emails, were merely cumulative and basically the same thing as the earlier emails?
It was cumulative of what Judge Ray had heard from my mouth, standing up there saying, Judge, we admit all this. We have no desire to dispute the facts on this. We admit that we had a goal here.
So the answer is yes. They were merely cumulative and didn't anything more.
That's correct.
That begs the question, why weren't they produced?
Now we get into the second issue, Judge. This is a bankruptcy matter which came up on very short notice. This is not your typical situation where parties take time. They have time to search, produce documents, make objections, have objections heard, which is what happened in the state court. And when that process played out, that email was clearly produced. It wasn't hidden. It was produced. It was turned over. There was no secret about that email. What happened in this case
is... So it's just a coincidence that these particular days of emails were omitted inadvertently.
It absolutely is, Judge. And we produced over 1,600 pages voluntarily. The way discovery came up in this case, and this is in the record, it's in the transcripts of the depositions, and it was put in both the first and second trials. We were in depositions about 2.5 weeks before the actual trial date of November 10th, and sitting in my office with Mr. Softness, who was Mr. Wortley's counsel at the time, there was no discovery requests outstanding. I said, David, don't you want to have discovery? Shouldn't we exchange documents? He said, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I said, okay, we'll each make a request. I'll make the request to you. You make one back. We'll give you our documents.
Did you review the production?
Review the production the best we could.
No. Did you personally review, or your co-counsel, review the production?
My associate did the primary review and then went over with me any questions that he had before we produced documents.
Those documents, the emails we're talking about, were copied to you, correct?
It appears they were.
Okay. So you would have
known. Not the initial emails, but it appears that after that, a couple of days later, they were sent to my office.
So you were aware of the existence of those emails?
I was not personally aware of the existence of those emails at that time.
Then when the depositions were taken?
The depositions had already been taken, Judge. The depositions were taken in October.
That wasn't my question.
I'm sorry.
When those depositions were taken, there was discussion about whether there had been some pre-discussion about filing the bankruptcy.
Yes, sir.
And it seemed to me inconsistent with what was said in deposition, seemed to be inconsistent with those emails. Did that not seem unusual to you or something you should bring to opposing counsel's
attention? When my client testified, I did not find an inconsistency in his testimony, and I have his testimony right here, and I think that the testimony as it's been presented to you and paraphrased is not what the testimony says in the actual deposition transcript. My client, when questioned about whether he was involved in the process early on and had discussions, said clearly, and this is on page 50 of that deposition, yeah, early on I did. He was then asked when that was, and he said mistakenly first June 09, and then I said 09. Then on page 51, 10, June 10. So he testified and admitted that he was involved in discussions in June 10.
What do you do with page 52 of the deposition? I want to know what was the intended purpose of filing the involuntary, but I do not know. Now, he'd gotten an email and conferred with you about the purpose.
The reason that he didn't know, Judge...
Well, was it to get paid? I do not know. I was not involved with the decision.
He was not.
He was right in the middle of it. He set out the plan.
He did not set out the plan. Mr. Jurnich gave his opinion of what a plan was, and that plan is not what the plan was as we performed it and played it out in court.
Did you have any conversation with Mr. Jurnich about filing an involuntary? No.
And
that's an outright lie.
He did not have a conversation with him. There was an email that at the time...
An email is not a conversation.
An email is not a conversation in the sense that he understood it to be a verbal conversation. And I'm quite 100% sure that he didn't remember that email chain at the time because he had disinvolved himself from the process. There are other emails that are put into evidence at the trial where clearly he testifies and says, and it's in this deposition as well, that because of his friendship with Joe Wortley, when the business issues became what they were, they'd just gone to the U.S. Open together. And he said, I'm stepping away from this. I'm giving complete control to Ron Roberts. I'm taking no part in the decision making. And he didn't. The dealings from that time forward were with Ron Roberts. Ron Roberts is the one that authorized the filing. And as he testifies in his deposition, Mr. Tarrant did not even know it had been filed until after the fact. And the first person he heard it from was Joe Wortley.
Mr. Jurnich,
let's slow down just a minute, Mr. Fugatz. This email of June 17 was addressed ostensibly to Mr. Tarrant. That was your client. Did you receive a copy of that at the time it was transmitted?
Not at the time it was initially sent. I apparently received it 2 days later via a transmittal, a copy from Mr. Jurnich.
And did not Mr. Tarrant respond to that by saying, in words more or less, that he approved the plan?
He said there were some issues with it, but, you know, it would need to be discussed or something like that. But yes, he did. There's no question this email exists. The question is, did this email change anything that Judge Ray ruled upon after he heard the first trial?
It changes everything if the purpose was to wipe out Wortley.
The purpose was not to wipe out Wortley, Judges.
That's what it says in the email.
That was Jurnich's email. That was not Mr. Tarrant. And what Jurnich said in that email about debtor in possession and all the other stuff that he threw out there is not what we did.
Well, let's turn to Mr. Jurnich's deposition. You were there, right?
I was there at Mr. Tarrant's deposition.
And Mr.
Zinkler was there at Mr. Jurnich's deposition.
But you read his deposition, Mr. Jurnich's deposition, correct?
Did I have it?
You read it?
Yes, absolutely.
Before you went to the hearing?
Yes.
His testimony was inaccurate, wasn't it, with regard to the discussions before the filing
and the purpose of the filing? He testifies initially that he didn't know or recall whether there were discussions. And then later on, he says in his deposition that there were discussions with Mr. Roberts. Now, obviously, there's an issue here, a potential issue, as to whether they considered that email he sent to Roberts, Tarrant, and then later copied me was a conversation. The word that was used in the deposition, I believe, was conversation. I don't think it's unreasonable from the point of view of somebody who's a layperson to not consider an email a conversation. Is it a communication? Yes, it is a communication. But at the end of the day, we stood up there from the very first time this went to court, and we said to Judge Ray...
Did it ever occur to you that giving you credit for, it could have been a misunderstanding as to what he meant by communication, that the basis for the claim was that there was some collusion and that this was set forth, it could have at least been represented to be set forth in those emails, and that after the fact, say, maybe we misunderstood the word conversation and we're going to give you these emails now?
Yeah.
It never occurred
Judge,
to you?
I didn't know personally that the email existed or see it until we were doing our due diligence in producing the documents in the state court case. And that's when I saw that email, and it was produced.
Wait a minute. You told me a few minutes ago you saw it 2 days after it was transmitted.
Obviously, I saw it. If I got it, I physically saw it when it came in. I did not have any personal recall of it. And therefore, when Mr. Tarrant testified and when I read Mr. Jurinich's deposition, it didn't occur to me that they had said anything that was inaccurate. Remember, these depositions were taken before all this discovery. This discovery, which only occurred because I suggested it, was basically a document dump 2 days and 1 day before the trial. Mr. Softness had the option of postponing the trial. He first raised that and then chose not to and said, I want to go forward.
Well, he wasn't aware of the existence of those documents. If you had said there are these other email strings, you might want to consider those before we go forward, his decision may have been different.
We've had two trials. Judge Ray has...
I understand that, but might not his decision have been different if he said, I've got some additional emails that you might be interested in?
I'm sure if he had that email, he would have put it in at that time, like he put in hundreds of other documents and emails.
Okay. So your explanation is you gave him 1,600-plus documents, many emails, and just by coincidence, the two that are now the subject of this discussion were omitted.
There were
emails before and after these 2 days of emails.
I produced on very short notice to the
Is that correct? Is that your...
Yes, I produced to the best of our...
Is that your position? That's merely a coincidence that these 2 days of emails, among all the 1,600 documents that were filed, including emails before and after those 2 days of emails,
I don't take the position, Judge, that these were the only ones that were not produced at that time. I'm sure there were other ones that were not produced at that time. We're focused on these emails because these are the ones that they've put into the motion and form the basis of the Rule 60B motion. I have no doubt that there were other emails that were missed and not put into the production at that time. We did the best we could producing 1,600 pages of documents, what it was amounted to, 1 day before the trial. We got theirs 2 days before, and per agreement, they got ours the next day.
Mr. Pugach, who were the decision makers with respect to the filing of the involuntary petition in the bankruptcy court?
The decision makers were Ron Roberts and myself. Mr. Tarrant had nothing to do with that decision, and Mr. Jurinich had nothing to do with that decision. This is what I do for a living. I've done it for 37 years, and I stand by the fact that everything we did in filing that petition was in good faith, within our rights, and this is what I told Judge Ray. Stood up there, we put the evidence on by proffer, and my proffer makes it very clear in the first trial, in the second trial, and by the testimony that ultimately came in conjunction with the second trial, where I basically said, so what? We knew Mr. Wortley was alleging his conspiracy.
Let me ask a question about that, because it seems to me before Judge Ray and before Judge Williams, you were conflating the same issue versus the same or different evidence, and that went round and round and round.
Yes.
And those judges seem to have bought into that. But those are two different issues, whether it's the same issue brought up in the prior hearing or whether it's the same evidence to support the claims in those issues.
The reason it is significant is because in order to grant relief under 60B, it has to not only be newly discovered evidence, it has to, as Mr. Rogo acknowledged, the standard is that it would have changed the outcome. And you have Judge Ray, who lived with this case for 3 years through the first trial, the second trial, a motion for summary judgment where they alleged newly discovered evidence and then admitted it wasn't newly discovered, and that half of what they said was newly discovered they'd put into evidence in the first trial, a motion to withdraw the reference to Judge Kahn, the follow-up motions that came back before the bankruptcy court, including the motion for rehearing, where these June 17th and 19th emails were presented to Judge Ray, and he looked at it all, and he didn't say it to slough it off or anything else. He basically said, after I've seen this now for 2-3 years, so what? It's all the same thing that Mr. Wortley's been alleging since day one. He filed his state court action, which alleges all these things, And I took that all into consideration, and I find that in all that that's there, he's got state court remedies. He's suing in state court for his damages, but it's not bad faith in the bankruptcy because they had a right to file it. They moved for a trustee, and Mr. Muckamel, as an independent bankruptcy trustee, took this over, and he made the decision to sell the assets after Mr. And this is all on the record, after Mr. Wortley asked for the ability to come up with financing, came up with nothing. And Mr. Muckamel, it doesn't matter what those emails said, Mr. Muckamel's testified, I'm the one that made the decision to sell the assets because the company was dead, it had no money, it wasn't going anywhere.
Answer my question, thank you.
My time is up. I'm happy to stay here and clarify any point that the court has on any of these issues. There's a lot here.
Hearing on May 24th, 2012, on page 12, you said you were probably going to take this up with the Florida Bar. Did you do that?
I did not. It was a statement made in anger in response to something that was said to me or accusation that was made against me.
I only speak for myself. I think maybe it'd be a good idea to let them look at it.
I would be not uncomfortable with having the bar look at any of this, and I would obviously have the opportunity to explain all this in more detail, Judge. I am totally comfortable with what I did. I take pride in what I do, and in no way, shape, or form would I disrespect the court by intentionally not producing a document or authorizing testimony that I felt or thought would be perjurious. And my reputation in 37 years, I think, stands for that.
You didn't correct the testimony of Mr. Turan.
First of all, I didn't put that testimony in. It was put in by Mr. Softness.
No, I'm talking about the deposition where you represented him.
No, in the deposition, Mr. Zinkler was there. I don't think Mr. Zinkler had any knowledge of any of this.
Sir, you're listed as representing Mr. Tarrant at his deposition. I'm asking you if you corrected his erroneous testimony.
Judge, I don't think his testimony was erroneous other than that
you and I have a different concept of the English language.
He may not have recalled that one email that he did not have access to that had not been produced.
He set out the whole plan and said he was going to confer with you about it. That's what he says in his email.
That's Jurinich.
To Tarrant.
That's Jurinich. Jurinich is not my client.
I see.
Mr. Tarrant's my client. Mr. Roberts is my client. And I listen to them. I don't listen to Mr. Jurinich. And I make my recommendations and provide the advice and consultation that I'm requested to by my clients. If somebody else has an opinion of something, they can have whatever opinion they want. They can think there's going to be a debtor in possession and a whole bunch of other things he said in that email that, frankly, I thought were ridiculous. And when I gave my client the advice, it was file the involuntary petition, file it as an 11, immediately move for a trustee. Mr. Wortley did not contest the petition. There's no 303 damages here. He didn't contest the petition. He didn't contest the status of the creditors. He didn't contest that the company wasn't paying its debts as they came due. We could have filed it as a 7, and a trustee would have come in, and the first thing the trustee would have done would be to liquidate the assets. Instead, we gave it an opportunity to reorganize until the trustee said, unless somebody comes up with more money, I can't do anything. I'm going to sell the assets. And Judge Ray makes note on more than one occasion that he was comfortable with this because however it started, it was put in the hands of an independent bankruptcy trustee that Mr. Wortley agreed to, and therefore it wasn't me, it wasn't Tarrant, it wasn't Jurinich, it wasn't Wortley. It was Barry Muckamel trustee deciding, I can't do anything with these assets, I've got to sell them. And that's what happened. And my client made an offer that subordinated his own $1 million and paid all the creditor debt, including Mr. Wortley's debt, in full. And Mr. Wortley had the opportunity to come in and was offered the same deal. If you want the company, then do the same thing we did. Subordinate your debt, pay the legitimate creditor debt, and you can have the company. He didn't want to do that. So Judge Ray was comfortable that everyone's rights had been protected here, that there was no bad faith, and he heard it at least 3, if not 4 or 5 different times, and was fed up with it at the end of it to the point where he sanctioned Mr. Wortley for all of this. So I get it. I understand the court's concern here. Looking at this in isolation, it's something that you could be offended by, but it's not the way it happened. It's not anything that was done either intentionally or to hide something from the court. I could read you the portion of the transcript where I summarized everything on the motion for a hearing, and it basically starts by saying, so what? We admitted all this. What's the difference whether This email was...
Did you ever admit that Jurinich and Tarrant conspired to get rid of Wortley?
No, sir.
No, you never did.
No, because that part I don't think is true.
The emails show me that's exactly what they were doing.
I respectfully disagree with the court. I don't think that that email says that they were conspiring to get rid of Mr. Wortley. That email indicates that that was one conclusion that could play out. But whatever Mr. Jurinich...
I guess we won't know because those documents weren't produced. But you keep going back, and I think this mantra was repeated many times, that Mr. Wortley agreed to the trustee. Mr. Wortley could have bought the assets. But the issue goes back earlier than that, and that is whether the bankruptcy itself was filed in good faith. And if that was not the case, we never would have had a trustee. And if there had been a trustee, the trustee would have been finished. There would not have been a sale.
The only good faith that's required, Your Honor, in order to file an involuntary bankruptcy is that you have the requisite legitimate creditor debt. Nobody's disputed my client was owed $1 million, and that the company was generally not paying its debts as they came due.
That's the bankruptcy standard.
Yes.
I'm talking about the purpose, the intention of filing the bankruptcy. Anyway.
My client clearly was trying to get his $1 million back. If that occurred by virtue of a sale of the assets and he had as much right to buy as anyone else, that's just not bad faith. And I understand the court's concerns.
June 18th, 2010 email, Tarrant to Jurinich outlines the plan for you to review. Part of the plan is getting rid of Wortley's $200,000 note and his stock. Need to discuss with Chad.
That didn't happen.
That was the purpose. That was the purpose your client outlined in an email.
That was a response to one of, I think, 7 points that were in that email.
Which, of course, he denied in his deposition that he'd had anything to do with it.
No, sir, he didn't. He said he was involved early on, and then at a point in time in June, he said he was involved in June of 2010. These emails are June of 2010. And then he said, toward the end, he withdrew himself from the process because of his friendship with Wortley.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, judges.
Mr. Rogo, you tell us how much time you need for rebuttal, because we've...
Not long, Your Honor, just a minute or two. The question is, would this information have made a difference? And I think that patently the June 17 to June 19 trail of emails was right on the point of whether or not this was a bad faith filing. The emails speak for themselves. The testimony of Jurinich and Tarrant speaks for itself. There's no way you can put those two together and find that Tarrant and Jurinich were speaking the truth.
Mr. Rogo, let me ask you a question. I think the theory the appellees is similar to what Al McGuire would say, no harm, no foul, that your client agreed to the trustee, and that was repeated time and time again before and by Judge Ray, I think even Judge Williams, and that your client had the opportunity to buy the assets if he so chose. You have a comment about that?
It begs the question that you posed, Judge Huck, about whether or not there should have even been a bankruptcy proceeding. And I think that's the key to this case. When he made the motion to dismiss the filing for being a bad faith filing, that is the critical moment of this case. And had that been heard based upon a fully developed record and disclosed emails and emails that belied the testimony that was produced at that November 10 hearing, we never would have had any of the subsequent proceedings. There would have been no Mr. Mukamal, no trustee, nothing. None of that would have happened. So that's my answer to the question, that this goes back to the very moment of that filing and whether or not that filing was in good faith, and this newly discovered evidence shows that it was not. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next case is